So to introduce our talk today, I wanted to show you some pictures. And here, Sam was concerned she would upstage the lady whose birthday it was. What you wear can really affect how you feel. We've got the lovely Jonathan and Claire Coleman up there, Sam, myself, Dominie and Zach. And today we're going to be talking, amongst other things, about clothing or the lack of it.
Flick and I have been meeting together on a weekly basis, hash when we can fit it in, looking at Isaiah 59 to 61. When I read chapter 59, I thought God was being harsh. I didn't think God was like that, the way he was speaking, like...
Your hands are stained with blood, your fingers with guilt, your lips have spoken falsely, and your tongue mutters wicked things.
I felt as if God was having a go and having a dig at people. This surprised me because I thought God was a caring God who helped people. This sounded as if he was judging them and was angry with them. I was kind of thrown by this. Me and Flick looked at other verses and I realised God in fact was wanting justice for people. He was angry and was talking like that because there was no justice and it was the poor that were going to miss out. For example, verse 4 says...
No one calls for justice. No one pleads a case with integrity. They rely on empty arguments. They utter lies. They conceive trouble and give birth to evil.
In verse 7 says...
Their feet rush into sin. They are swift to shed innocent blood. They pursue evil schemes. Acts of violence mark their ways.
God was angry because there was no justice. When there is no justice, there's poor and helpless that do not get a fair trial. This showed me God cares about the poor. He cares about the helpless and all those who get taken advantage of when there is no justice. I learnt God isn't a harsh God. He's a fair God who wants to see justice. I've experienced abuse and theft myself. Reading these verses showed me that God loves me. I am his daughter. He cares about what happens to me. He gets angry when I've been taken advantage of and cares about justice. I love the song, He's a Good, Good Father. And these verses make me realise he really is a good, good father.
I come from a family where the kinds of things people get angry about is whether their food is served late in a restaurant or if their chips are cold. Now, don't get me wrong, I love my food and waiting is not something that comes easily to me. In Isaiah, it talks a lot about different nations. Nearly 10 years ago, we felt God wanted us to move to Chafford. Although it's not a different nation, I've come from a middle-class background. Moving to this estate, I realised how different people can be from different classes. Sound different, dress different, and even eat different, as our life group is aware when I want to cook Moroccan chicken. And Sam's saying, why not do hot dogs and pizza? Although that might be to do with our personal preferences. One thing I love is how you can see different qualities of God in different cultures, as well as through different people and different personalities. Rita witnessed my parents expressing anger to each other. They helped at May's party before going out in London that evening. My mum wanted to help clear up as much as possible while my dad wanted to get to London that day. He was saying, please, darling, I think we really need to go now. And my mum was saying, darling, darling, I'm just coming. Darling, just let me do this. And so it went on. And that's generally how anger is expressed in my family. Unless, of course, they do get served cold chips after waiting a long time. Then they drop the darlings as they complain to the manager. I've discovered that not everyone expresses anger in this way. Sam and I had an interesting moment when May broke her arm at Soul Sisters. But please don't anyone be put off by this. It was nothing to do with the excellent organisation of the event. Sam couldn't believe that Steve and I were not having a go at someone. She thought if we really cared about May, we'd be mad as a result. And I feel incredibly loved by my neighbour, as I've seen his anger towards people he feels have taken advantage of me. Although he mostly insults me and or my faith every time he sees me, I know if anyone threatened to hurt me, he'd be over in a flash to defend me. Getting angry to protect people you love, as God does here, is something I've seen shown by my neighbours and friends.
I can understand why God was angry with those people in these verses. I can also relate to the ones God was angry with. Verse 3 says,
your tongue mutters wicked things.
Because I've said some really horrible things to people, real hurtful things, and I've lied to people, I've made people feel guilty to get my own way. All that is what God is angry with. Verse 5 says,
they hatch the eggs of vipers and spin a spider's web. Whoever eats their eggs will die, and when one is broken, an adder is hatched. Their cobwebs are useless for clothing. They cannot cover themselves with what they make.
When I've told a lie, I then have to try and cover it up. Before I know it, it's like a spider's web. I feel like I'm in a trap. It's kind of, that's not what I am, who I am. It's not who I was created to be. We thought about how gossip gives birth to more gossip, like James in 3. You say one thing and it spreads like wildfire. Like Isaiah says, the egg hatch and out comes poisonous snakes. Reading these verses made me feel bad and guilty. Everyone does bad stuff and stuff they don't mean, as it says in James 3.
No one can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil and full of deadly poison.
I realised it was wrong and not God's way.
Gossip is something I've struggled with for a long time. I'm fascinated by people and love to know what is going on in their lives. So much so that I have a job doing exactly that. In my profession, they call this being curious, but we all know it's being nosy. My mum made me this book when I turned 18. Can you hear me? In it, somebody wrote, words to describe you. And among the words was gossip, or at least good for one. So there it is in black and white. recently I was really struggling with somebody, and it was a difficult time, and I had a couple of run-ins with them where they'd not been persuaded to my way of thinking fast enough for me and had not responded kindly to my efforts to convince them. I felt challenged by God not to talk about them behind their back, but I found this so hard. I mean, why? It might support others and they wouldn't even know. But Rita encouraged me to obey God in this, and she and others prayed that I would be able to resist this temptation, which was really strong to say the least. But what surprised me most was that it ended up benefiting me. Instead of feeling more angry, resentful and hurt, as I would have done had I talked negatively about them, I felt less burdened and more free to get on with stuff and not have to judge them, as this was not my job. Psalm 119 talks about God being a shield and his words giving light. God's ways are like a shield. They provide protection and are like the sun brightening our days. They give light, bringing goodness for us, even when it can be hard to follow them.
Verse 2 says,
but your iniquities have separated you from your God. Your sins have hidden his face from you so that he will not hear.
I realise that the bad stuff I say doesn't just spread poison. It's a wall separating me and God. But these verses show me God has torn down the wall. Chapter 59 begins with this verse.
Surely the arm of the Lord is not too short to save. So we've set the scene for what was going on at the time. It says, truth is nowhere to be seen, and whoever shuns evil becomes prey. The Lord looked and was displeased that there was no justice. He saw that there was no one. He was appalled that there was no one to intervene.
It goes on to then say about how God sends Jesus to rescue the situation. I really, really love verse 17.
He put on righteousness like a breastplate and the helmet of salvation on his head.
It just comes across as protection. What is amazing is how he gives us this same armour. In Ephesians 6 it says,
finally be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armour of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. Put on the breastplate of righteousness, take the helmet of salvation.
Things still may hurt us, but God has given us his armour. It's the same armour that Jesus wore. Instead of having to make up for all the stuff I've done wrong, which is like trying to dress myself in cobwebs, God gives me a breastplate of righteousness. It's his righteousness. He took my place on the cross and died for all the things that I have done wrong. He has taken away the things I am ashamed of. I can wear his protection. I can be confident in my own best efforts, but in his. Even though I might still have bad days and will still make mistakes, I can wear God's helmet of salvation, the same helmet Jesus wore to rescue me. God has given this to me, no matter what people say, what things are going on in my mind, all I've done wrong. I can be truly confident that because of Jesus, I am saved. And I know I am his daughter, bought at a price. I am the daughter of the King, daughter of God himself, daughter of the Creator of the world. I am not saying I'm perfect and it's never going to happen again, but God will forgive me because he's a good, good father. And Jesus took my place on the cross.
I read about the armour of God in Ephesians, but it was only when I read these verses with Sam that I noticed this is the same armour given to Jesus. This blew me away. Wow, this armour God gives us is his own armour which Jesus was clothed in. I know it does say that in Ephesians, but seeing it right here in Isaiah really made me see, wow, it's his own armour. How cool is that?
It's important to remember that God giving us his armour came at a price, a high price. It was not one we have to pay. It has already been paid. Jesus paid on our behalf. When he was on the cross, he was naked. The cross was a painful death for criminals. Have I gone too far?
No, it's
behalf. Jesus hung on the cross, even though he had done nothing wrong. He was completely naked. He had people spitting on him and mocking him. He was exposed to the nakedness and shame that was ours. Isaiah 61.
Instead of your shame, you will have a double portion. And instead of humiliation, they will shout for joy over their portion. Therefore, they will possess a double portion in their land. Everlasting joy will be theirs.
A swap happened. Jesus took our nakedness, which we were trying to hide with cobwebs, and gave us his armour.
Although I'm pretty uninhibited, if I have a dream that I've gone out forgetting to dress myself, I wake up feeling so vulnerable and exposed. I can't imagine what this would have been like for Jesus on a cross in front of crowds, being naked and suffering the disgrace of a criminal's punishment.
Chapter 60 starts with,
"Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord rises up on you. See, the darkness covers the earth, and thick darkness is over the peoples. But the Lord rises upon you, and his glory appears over you."
This made me think, rise and shine. You might get up and think, oh no, it's a really dull day, it's raining, it's really dull outside. But you might think it's like a breath of fresh air, as God is with me. Verse 19 and 20 say,
"The sun will no more be your light by day, nor will the brightness of the moon shine on you. For the Lord will be your everlasting light, and your God will be your glory. The sun will never set again, and your moon will wane no more. The Lord will be your everlasting light, and your days of sorrow will end."
I feel like to be free, I've got to forgive, and I don't think I could have forgiven without God. I'm not saying I've completely forgiven. I still have to forgive every day, but the pain is not as raw as it used to be. I feel it's a bit like a cut. It heals, the pain gets better, but you still have the marks from it. I think about what Jesus went through when he died on the cross. Before he hung on the cross, he was whipped 39 times with a rope and bits of glass in it which shredded his skin. 40 times generally kills people. Then a robe was placed on him which would have been painful, having had your skin ripped to shreds. You can't imagine it, can you? There was a crown made of thorns which would have dug into his head. The very people he made and loved mocked him. This was before he had nails drilled into his wrists and ankles. He would have had to pull himself up on these nails on the cross every time he took a breath before he eventually died of suffocation. When I think of my scars, I know I can remember his. Whatever suffering I had been through, or anyone has, we know God has been there. He has been abused, rejected, abandoned, and let down by those closest to him. He's been through emotional, physical, and spiritual pain. I know that he gets it. When he asks me to forgive, he has been there and been through what I've been through. In Revelation, it talks about heaven and how he will wipe away every tear from our eyes. Here is a picture of how I will be in heaven, and there will be no more pain, no more suffering, and I will be with my God who knows what I have been through, and he has been through too.
When I got close with Sam, she would tell me things about her life that would make my jaw drop. I remember sometimes feeling such pain inside, hearing some of the hard things, violence and difficult experiences Sam had had. One Easter, I heard a talk. The man was saying how he had watched the Passion film showing Jesus' death. He says he'd realised Jesus had to die, but he just couldn't understand why did it have to be so painful. The whipping, the mocking, the nails. And then he wondered whether all of this was for those who have suffered so that they would know Jesus had suffered like them. Tears streamed down my face as I heard this, thinking of God's love and suffering for Sam and all she'd been through.
As a couple, for me and Scott, unless Scott had got to know Jesus, we would still be in the rut we were in. God truly did save Scott and still continues to. The beginning of 59 says,
surely the arm of the Lord is not too short to save, nor his ear too dull to hear.
This is something I've seen firsthand in Scott's life. Without God, we would still be in that awful place we were in. God brought Scott out of addiction. I don't know how he did it. I couldn't even do it. I thought I could, me being powerful and all. But thanks to Jesus, chains have gone. He has been set free. That's another song I love. It also says how his ear is not too dull to hear. When Scott relapsed, I was chatting to Flick. I explained that Scott would have to wait 6 to 8 weeks before he could get another place at the rehab. I kind of knew that that was too long and we couldn't carry on as we were. Flick said, well, let's pray. I thought, what's the point in that? There's no way it's going to be a quicker turnaround than that. But I didn't tell Flick this and let her continue to pray. And then the following morning, Scott got a phone call from the Carpenter's Arms saying that they had got him a place for the very next day. I was just amazed, absolutely amazed. Even though I'd seen God at work, I'd never seen such specific answer to prayer. God just keeps on wowing me. He's amazing. He keeps on giving when you think there's nothing else left to give. For instance, when Scott first got into rehab, that was a wow moment for me. Then Scott ends up coming out, and it's like, wow, he's got a place the very next day. Things he's done with Phil and Kath and Hope House. He called Stephen Flick to help Phil and Kath and Jared and Helen to help in Turkey. I feel like he's calling me and Scott to amazing stuff too. He takes us on to Isaiah 61.
The Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted and to proclaim freedom to the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners.
This to me shouts out open doors. So as a life group, I feel me and Steve particularly felt we wanted to reach out to struggling families, people with addiction, Chafford area. Steve has worked with them and I've had the experience myself of how addiction affects everything from not having enough money to buy food for your family, being on the breadline, as well emotionally feeling on my own, as I did when I experienced 2 miscarriages, and addiction takes your partner away physically and emotionally. I wanted to do something which led us renting out St Andrew's every Thursday night starting autumn last year. welcoming people with a hot meal and a drink. We offer an ear to chat, prayer if they want it. One or two have come with addiction, and it's exciting to see Jesus reaching out to them and meeting them. The twins have reconnected with their dad, Ray, who has been coming since we opened. I know they really like spending time with him, with Marshall and Cody Lee. Isaiah 61 is the passage Jesus read out when he came to the earth on a rescue mission. He said, after reading it out today, this has been fulfilled in your hearing. Knowing the wall has been torn down, dressed in his armour, knowing he swapped our flimsy cobwebs for his breastplate of righteousness and the helmet to know he has saved us no matter how we feel. Our mission is the same. Open Door is one way I want people to experience what God and Scott has done for me.
Isaiah 61 was focused on a church-run night shelter I worked in, which was a life-changing experience for me. Connecting with the homeless connected me right into the very heart of God. I remember chatting with someone from the church. She said she was not planning to volunteer at the night shelter, as it was not really her thing. And I remember thinking, oh, that's so sad. It's not really my thing either. But through it, I gained more than I could ever put into words. What's so exciting is in Grace Church, we have such amazing privilege to be part of Hope at Home, which literally is about giving those who have been freed from trafficking and slavery a safe and loving home. We can be part of Open Door, and we've really loved having Grace Church Youth and Luke come and visit us. We can be part of what Kath and Phil are doing, serving such poor people in Zambia. What a privilege we have getting to give time, support and money to these fantastic things. Visiting Kath and Phil, it was clear how much they value gifts and packages, cards, WhatsApp, Facebook messages from people in Grace Church. And even if you gave just a little money per month, it helps them and speaks of your support. We can give money to pay for vegetables that Kath buys from an orphanage, which blesses her because she gets a trip out of the hospital, and blesses these 5 kids who live there. How cool is that? We can pray for these people at the very least, which is the best thing we can do. Quick plug for women's prayer Tuesday evening at Pascal's house. Here's a photo of a boy many of you prayed for. Kath was worried he would not return to Makingi Hospital, and he did. And here he is after successful surgery. Thank you, God. We also have opportunities in our schools, colleges, workplaces, homes, families, at the school gates to live out this fantastic passage. And I remember Pam Norris sharing how at the school she worked in, she would take time to brush one girl's hair who would come into school without having been done. And Amanda Snelling sharing how she cares for the lonely in her job as a physio. I know Tom Pritchard wants to help others, and so he lives out these verses in his job as a policeman, which takes him to some of the most hurting people in our society. This passage is not an optional extra for people who feel called to serve the poor. It's Jesus' calling, and it's his calling for all of us, and it's so exciting. Grace Church's vision is for us to be followers of Jesus. And therefore, that means being friends with the poor. It may look different for each one of us. Can you click on the... Who's got the clicker? Oh, yeah. Can you... Yeah, and the next one. Thank you. For Sam, she had every excuse not to set up Open Door. Scott works away most of the week, so she's effectively a single mum of 5 most of the time, also juggling work, and she's got other things she's doing, like learning to drive. She could have said, now's not a good time. Also, I don't think she could have done it on her own. Every week, Mark and Sandrine are among the first to arrive to help set up Open Door. Mark greets me with, can I get you a drink, Flick? At the end of the evening, you'll see them working hard, hoovering and helping clear up. They also think of things I would never think of in a million years, such as health and safety, and have put in rules to keep the children safe. Pippa has come, despite being heavily pregnant, and brought games and cooked for 15 to 20 people. And even today, having just had a baby, said, I don't know if I can make it, but if someone comes around, I can still cook, which just blew me away. Each person is playing their own unique and crucial parts in supporting Sam's vision. Is God asking you to set something up? Or if not, is he asking you to support someone else in what they're doing? Support is so key. I so valued Rita, Therese and others praying with me to handle the situation I was in and do the right thing. Without that, I don't know how I'd have got on. That's why the other part of Grace Church's vision is family on a mission. We're in it together. We're made for mission, but not to do it on our own. That's why being part of a life group is so important. It's one way we can encourage each other in this mission as we're followers of Jesus and friends with the poor. And I think if you fill in a card at the back, you can find out more about that. Even with this, you may feel on your own at times. There's been a few times, despite the amazing support of incredible people here in Grace Church, that I've felt like this in Chalford. But when we read Isaiah 61, we know God couldn't be more for the brokenhearted, the poor, and the hurting. So he's right there with us. Whatever feeble attempts we make, he's 100% behind them. He'll use our 5 loaves and 2 fish or whatever we have to do immeasurably more than we can imagine. God goes with us wherever we are, especially when we go to that person on their own, the lonely, the hurting, and the poor. I love how people in Grace Church are so ready to serve. And God gives us opportunities for this. I first met Sam at a toddler event. And then after not seeing her for ages, I saw her at the school gate. She was pregnant with Layton, had just moved house and looked exhausted. She accepted my offer for help. Then when Dominie and I were helping her unpack and I joked about my awful singing in church, Scott expressed an interest to find out more to see if the Bible was true. We invited them to Alpha and things went from there. And I love how recently I could offer a teacher at Joel's school caring for a dying mum meals because I can count on this church's generosity. Christine has done so many baskets of lovely things for people who've had babies, have moved house, have been ill, people she's never met, and they've been so touched by this. The Nixons organise Serving Sundays to show Jesus' love to others in our communities. We are family on a mission. These verses talk about the hurting becoming oaks of righteousness. For people whose hurts run deep, God's love runs to these deep places so they have strong foundations in his love and what he has done. They become oaks of righteousness. In Corinthians, it says how as Christ's sufferings flow into our lives, so his comfort overflows into our lives. So those who've experienced this can comfort others with the same comfort that they've received. The key to revival and transformation in our towns is therefore the poor and hurting meeting Jesus. And I love how God does not just save us, but he gives us his righteousness and he does these completely lavish and incredible swaps in these verses. Such incredible, supernatural and miraculous changes. When pregnant with May, I shared lifts to work with a colleague who was also a psychologist. As we became friends, she opened up about her life and some difficulties she'd had. And I remember one conversation where she said she did not believe people could really change. She explained that it did not matter how much therapy she had, no one could take away the experiences she'd had growing up and go back in time and take away what had been done to her. I tried to convince her otherwise, but her mind was made up. That night, I was in tears as I prayed Isaiah 61 over her. Sorry. She moved away from Bromsgrove, but did meet with God. She now does things with her church to reach out to other families and children. And I reminded her of our conversation. And she said, I cannot believe I ever thought like that. It's so the opposite of what I now think. She'd met God and she'd realised that change is possible. One friend said, how with God, the most selfish can become the most generous. The most proud can become the most humble, as God can change our weaknesses into strengths. Zacchaeus in the Bible would rip people off, stealing from them as a tax collector. After he met Jesus, he gave his wealth away. We see similar things in Open Door. As people meet God, they change and are desperate to give to others. They're oaks of righteousness. It's so exciting. And this is good news for a sinner like me. God can transform even a long-standing gossip like me. Words are so powerful, but it can work both ways. One friend I work with said, this will endear this lady to you. And she explained to me how she'd emailed out asking for ideas to help a boy with autism that she was working with. And despite emailing everyone, nobody in the whole trust responded. And then one day, this lady turned up and she'd brought with her rulers and pencils that this boy could fiddle with in school to help stop him getting into trouble. And she pointed out to my friend how because it was stationery, he wouldn't get told off for having them. Every time I then saw this lady, I remembered this and saw her as the kind person she was. And I want God to change me from someone whose words bring others down and destroy reputations to someone whose words build others up.
Reading these passages challenged us about gossip and how we speak about people. They also made me feel excited about what God has done for me and excited about the future and all he has in store for me, for Scott, my family, for my Grace Church family and Bromsgrove and the end of the earth.
So how will you respond to these verses to be a doer, not just a hearer of what he says? Is God stirring up in you his anger at injustice about things in your workplace, neighbourhood, and or in our society? What does he want you to do about it? Is God convicting you about gossip or sin in your own life? Perhaps asking others to pray for you about this, as people did for me, might help you.
Does God want to free you from trying to make up for what you have done wrong in your own efforts? To remind you, Jesus rescued you and paid for all you have done wrong on the cross. It's a free gift, not one of you have to work for. Has God put your dreams in your heart like he did for me with Open Doors? What's the next step in responding to these?
How can you play your part in the fantastic mission of Isaiah, as we say in Grace Church, being a follower of Jesus, friends with the poor and family on a mission? Is it setting something up, talking to the poor or lonely in your school, home or work, and or supporting others in this? Sandrine blew me away recently. As we were busy preparing to visit Kath and Phil in Zambia, she gave us meals, wanted to know our itinerary so she could pray for us in every step of our trip, and even offered to clean our flat whilst we were away. It was amazing being so supported by our life group, all at Open Door, and everyone in Grace Church. What's God asking you to do? And if you don't know, please read Isaiah 61 this week and ask him.
Thank you.